This is Jordan Seculo. Breaking news. Trump administration announces major changes to the Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security to our nation's asylum laws.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The new rule is intended to avoid abuse of the asylum system, which is overwhelming parts of the system, even while the border is overwhelmed, by instituting a requirement that people who come to our border must have and want to apply for asylum must have already applied and been denied at a country they passed through.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Remember, asylum is about safety, not a choice of forum. It's not forum shopping. The idea is that you want to get people safe, and this is something America's been very generous about in the past, and yet it's being fraudulently abused right now.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls right away, 1-800-684-3110. The Trump administration, in a response to the crisis at our southern border and a lack of action by a Democrat-controlled House of Representatives who loves talking about how bad the conditions are down there but will not really work on bipartisan legislation to get a real fix to the crisis at our border. They approved some funds, but not enough. And, of course, the idea is that they want to let everyone out of those facilities. Republicans have said that they want to improve the facilities so that people are in more hygienic conditions, better conditions. The vice president was there. No one's trying to hide the ball that there's a crisis, that things are bad at the southern border. So the administration's doing everything it can through the power of the executive branch. And this time it is through authority delegated to the executive branch via the Immigration and Nationality Act that allows, and Congress delegated the power to the executive branch through that law to enhance the integrity of the asylum process by placing further restrictions or limitations on eligibility for aliens who seek asylum in the United States. And it can add new bars to eligibility for an asylum and those who try to cross in the southern border but didn't apply for protection from persecution or torture where it was available in at least one country outside the alien's country. So what does this mean? If you're traveling up through somewhere in Central America and you are no longer in danger, physical danger, when you reach Mexico or the specific town that you reach in Mexico, you first have to declare asylum there. Now, if that is denied, you could still bring your asylum claim to the United States at the border. But if you are safe, that doesn't mean economically it's the best place for you to be. But if you are physically safe and you're no longer facing that threat of harm, you declare asylum the first place you can. There are exceptions, of course, to this, which I think are very humane and follow the human rights record. So there's exceptions for the conventions against torture and on human trafficking. That would include trafficking of minors, trafficking of adults, of labor. So there's exceptions there. So if you're being trafficked across all of these borders, of course, you never could have made the claim for asylum because you were never in a safe spot until you were able to get away from those who were trafficking you. So this new rule will be, it's an interim rule, will go into effect tomorrow. So it's being announced today, it goes into effect tomorrow. And what does it mean? Effectively, no more asylum claims will be made at the U.S. southern border. So again, the new rule published in the Federal Register require most migrants entering through America's southern border to first seek asylum in one of the countries they traversed, whether that's Mexico, somewhere in Central America, or elsewhere on their journey. And in most cases, if that application is denied, would they then be able to seek asylum in the United States? What do you think about this new rule change from the Trump administration taking your phone calls as immigration takes center stage this weekend with the ICE raids and all the hoopla around that? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. And yes, this will likely face some kind of legal challenge. 1-800-684-3110. I want to start taking phone calls early in the broadcast about this latest move by the Trump administration to start getting things right with our border crisis while Congress is just not acting. 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Double the impact of your donation today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So I'm holding it in my hands for people watching on Facebook and Periscope. This is the interim final rule. It's interesting. This is announced through the Department of Homeland Security jointly with the Department of Justice. So it's the Department of Justice, Executive Office for Immigration Review, and the Department of Homeland Security jointly issuing what is called the interim final rule on asylum eligibility and procedural modifications. As again, from the Department of Justice and Homeland Security, this is called the Third Country Asylum Rule, and there are exceptions to it for humanitarian reasons. So if you're being a victim of trafficking, of course, this rule wouldn't apply to you. So what's this rule? It's pretty simple. Most migrants entering through America's southern border would first have to seek asylum in one of the countries they traverse, one of the countries they already traveled through. Whether that's in Mexico, some another country in Central America, or elsewhere. And we've had people from, as far away as Africa and the Middle East coming through the southern border documented. So was there a country along the way, that's the question asked, where you could have safely applied for asylum and you would have been no longer in threat of persecution? I focused in on this in a post-JD degree at Georgetown Law. And my LLM and these asylum laws, and which were, again, this is the law that most of the world follows in Europe and that human rights law actually supports, whether it's the UN or the European Court of Human Rights, is that you claim asylum the first safe place you are. So, of course, if you're flying in the air from one place to another, you could still make the asylum claim here in the United States. But if you're making a journey across lands in various countries, asylum is not saying I'm in a bad economic situation. It's threat of persecution for a number of reasons. Nationality, race, political belief. If you're being, we've added to that kind of like if a major cartel or criminal gang is targeting you, and then you have to actually give proof of that your life is in danger and that the other members of your family's life would be in danger. So that's why you're making the claim. Not that economically things aren't great right now for you in Guatemala or El Salvador or Nicaragua. But then if you got to Mexico or another one of those countries along the way, I mean, if you're traveling all the way from somewhere in Central America or South America, you could find other places, and that you were no longer facing that threat, you had to at least apply for asylum there. Okay, and if it's denied there, then you may be eligible to apply for it still in the United States. But at least try and make the asylum application in the first country you are no longer facing that fear of persecution in. So again, if you're dealing with, this would exclude though, if you're being trafficked, of course, so you're not safe until you can actually make the claim. If, again, there's still the Convention Against Torture, and other exceptions will apply here for people who really couldn't make a claim anywhere else until they got to the United States. So if they were being chased, trafficked, hunted down, this is why asylum exists. And we do these cases, when we do these cases for people, and have done a number of them at the American Center for Law and Justice, it's for people whose physical life is in danger. They've received the threats inside their home country or in a region where they're no longer safe because they're being hunted by whether it's family members or a terrorist organization because of their... A lot of times we were dealing with people who converted to Christianity, Muslims who converted to Christianity in primarily the Sunni Arab world, and that they were, again, fleeing from that persecution. But we've done it from a number of places, the asylum claims. I want to get right to your phone calls. This should take a major load off of the system that is already broken when it comes to trying to deal with all these asylum claims that have come through in just the last year. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Nancy calling first in Massachusetts on line one. We're taking your calls, comments, thoughts on this at 1-800-684-3110. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Greetings from Cape Cod.
It's a nice place to be in the summer.
I'm sorry?
That's a nice place to be in the summer?
Oh, yeah. We love it. We're visiting from Georgia. So
got it.
I just had a quick question for you. We have our own problems up here. We have a lot of hurricane evacuees that won't leave the Cape. They found comfort up here in Cape Cod. But my question is this. When someone is coming across Mexico, and you said that they have to file for asylum there first, how will we know that it has been denied? And what sort of reasons would they deny their asylum?
Okay, so I think that the administration is being fair, that a lot of these countries are not the that we're asking people to apply for asylum in first do not even have as good of a system as we do. And our system is, on paper, it looks nice, and it has this flow chart. I studied that in law school. You go through all these different processes. But when you have hundreds of thousands of people making the application and like 1,000 judges to deal with it, it gets messy and it gets very complicated. And you, again, we really need an attorney. And there are attorneys available, oftentimes at no charge, doing it pro bono, absolutely no cost, to walk you through the system. And if you do have a representation, oftentimes you successfully are able to make your asylum claim because the attorney knows what kind of evidence you need to gather. But so we recognize as the United States, I think through this new interim rule, that you may not get asylum in these other countries because of their own reasons. It may not be a country that can accept a lot of people right now because of their own economic difficulties. They may have different standards that we would hold to ourselves to a higher standard and accept more people. I mean, we're kind of a country known for doing that. If you are legitimately fleeing persecution because of these specified reasons, and your life is in danger. So I think you will have to show either a denial of paperwork in some kind of form that you've at least tried and were denied, or there was no response, or you were deported immediately. That kind of paperwork should be available. So you don't necessarily need a lot of cooperation from the other countries. You just need to make sure these people coming who are going to eventually claim asylum in the U.S. or believe they will eventually claim asylum in the U.S. understand that they need to be able to show, unless they fall under one of the exceptions, like they were being trafficked, so that wouldn't count as being able to safely file in another country. That you'll have to show some kind of documentation, whether it's a form saying denied, whether it's a deportation. I think that all that will be enough to allow you then to go through the process here. But it's kind of a step one, which is the law that the world follows. It's the rule that the world follows. And it mostly has to do with people who are making these journeys over land. It's not port to port or airport to airport necessarily, because then you can make the claim because you haven't entered another place necessarily where you can make a claim. Even going so far into be lenient enough to say that if you bought your ticket to the U.S., but there was a stopover somewhere, that doesn't count under most laws. Because you haven't left the airport, you haven't gone through customs immigration there, you can't make that claim. Now, you could still decide to do it oftentimes, but we'll kind of allow that to move forward. This is really focused in on the crisis at our southern border. So many people making the asylum claims, not even knowing what justifies as a real good claim or not. So I think it helps weed out that process as well and make it clear to people that it's not to, if you want to come here as an economic migrant, to immigrate here for economic purposes, we have an immigration process for that. That's not asylum. And I think that it's very wrong to use and abuse that program, which is to save people whose lives are in danger from whether it's violent elements, terrorist organizations, the government, their own, you know, their government that they're fleeing. Again, you don't want to abuse that system with economic migrants. That is regular immigration that you should be able to wait your turn. And eventually, yes, we understand people want to come to the United States, a better economic system. So I do think that that enforcement mechanism won't be as difficult. I do think there will, of course, be some kind of legal challenge. I want to go to the phones as well. Here's Ken Cuccinelli. He's the acting director of Citizenship and Immigration Services, former attorney general of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Take a listen.
The new rule is intended to avoid abuse of the asylum system, which is overwhelming parts of the system, even while the border is overwhelmed, by instituting a requirement that people who come to our border must have and want to apply for asylum must have already applied and been denied at a country they passed through. Remember, asylum is about safety, not a choice of forum. It's not forum shopping. The idea is that you want to get people safe, and this is something America's been very generous about in the past, and yet it's being fraudulently abused right now.
So that again is exactly what I was talking about. Is the idea is asylum is to protect people whose lives are at risk, whose lives are in imminent danger of being ended. Not economically, things aren't as good as I'd like them to be right now, so I'm going to claim asylum. And so by changing the rules, you're really helping the people who are really facing the real persecution, real life-threatening issues. Continue to take your phone calls, a lot of calls in. We're not waiting till the second half hour to take calls. We're already taking one. We'll take more when we come back at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget, July is a matching challenge month. Whatever you can donate to the ACLJ is doubled at ACLJ.org. You can double the impact of your donation right now, ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Now, if you're wondering where my fellow colleagues from radio are, Than in Washington, Harry, and Wes is going to be on later. We've got a whole team. Remember last week they announced they're going to be there at a conference right now the Department of Justice is holding. We just played it for our Facebook and Periscope audience. If you're watching closely, you may have seen Than and Harry. I'm not sure who else. I'm not sure if it was some others from the ACLJ. It may have been the video cut to, but they're attending a conference on the BDS movement and what the DOJ and U.S. government is doing. Attorney General Barr is there to combat the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against the state of Israel. So our team is there, invited by the Department of Justice to take part in that conference. That is a top issue we work on at the ACLJ. Again, defending Israel. It's one of the newer strategies to try and undermine the state of Israel has been that BDS movement. So I'm going to try to get that some of that clipped out so you could see it. Or just to hear some of it too on the radio broadcast, but also for our Facebook and Periscope, who again you had to be looking right then to see them, but I noticed them right away. Our team right there at the Department of Justice with Attorney General Barr for this very important conference on defeating and fighting back against the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. But we are back to the major topic of the day. And that is that President Trump is determined to restore the sanctity of our asylum system and stop the overwhelming surge of illegal immigrants. I mean, that is the core of this new interim rule. It'll be released tomorrow. It's been uploaded already to the Federal Register. So we've got it. I mean, you can hold it in your hands. I'm holding my hands. I think it's about 60 pages or so. It's a rule. It's delegated already. Now, I'm sure there'll be legal challenges. But Congress, in the Immigration and Nationality Act, has allowed the executive branch, it's section 208B2C of the INA, to enhance the integrity of the asylum process by placing further restrictions or limitations on eligibility for aliens who seek asylum in the U.S. What does this one do? So what's this limitation? Well, it's not a prevention for someone ever seeking asylum here who has a legitimate claim. It says this: it would require most migrants entering through America's southern border to first seek asylum in one of the countries they traveled through, whether that be Mexico, a Central American country, or elsewhere. I mean, we have had people on the southern border from as far away as the continent of Africa and the region of the Middle East. I mean, so again, if there was a place where you could have claimed to be safe, then you had to at least show that you attempted to claim asylum there. And that if you were denied asylum in that country, you could then move along and ultimately try and make your asylum claim, which is what it is. It's a judicial process in the United States. Now, there's exceptions, of course, the humanitarian exception. If you're being trafficked, so if you're a victim of human trafficking and you're not able to make this claim until you are able to speak to a U.S. agent and kind of let them know what's going on, and you feared that throughout the process, there's an exception there. There's this exception for the Convention Against Torture that the U.S. is party to. So, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule for humanitarian reasons so that no one can say, I've already heard the left say, no way they went through this yet, but we're already reacting so negatively to this decision by the Trump administration today. But really what it's trying to do is get things back on track. Again, get things back on track. 1-800-684-3110. Let me take your phone calls on this issue. Let's go right to Kathy in Virginia online too. Kathy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey, Jay. My question is not real specific to the topic, although I will say that my husband is immigrating from Jamaica, and we're going through the process and doing it the right way, and we are achieving success with that.
Sure.
But that aside, I just wanted to ask you and see if, you know, is my thinking aligned with yours? So, you know, the Democrats were saying about this manufactured crisis, and when they initially started talking about the manufactured crisis, I assumed that they were saying that President Trump was making the scenario up. And then now that they realize that there's a crisis, now when they talk about manufactured, they almost act like they're saying that he created the crisis. And when I was watching Cortez on the news the other day, she was kind of bumbling and stumbling and looking down at her notes as if they were trying to backtrack and say, no, that's not what we meant by manufactured. This is what we meant by manufactured.
Yeah, no, like, listen, they got totally caught up in a mess. Okay, so you had the mainstream media, New York Times, major media outlets all saying there's no crisis. There's less people than ever before trying to cross the border. Who would try to come here when there's President Trump and the economy's booming? Well, a lot of people. We don't need a wall. And then boom. And they actually show up at the border and, whoa, they're shocked to see the conditions aren't great because the Trump administration's been telling them for over a year and a half how bad things are at the southern border, why we need a wall, why it's humanitarian, actually, purposes, so that people aren't just showing up illegally entering our country and being detained in facilities that are overwhelmed by staff that aren't even trained and to deal with how to deal with, detention facilities like this. This is what we're talking about. I mean, listen to Mike Pence. It's where Congress has ignored this. The mainstream media ignored it to a point, and then they tried to shift the blame. Here was VP Pence when he was there on the border at the facilities.
I was not surprised by what I saw. It's overwhelmed, and that's why Congress has to act.
I mean, but see, you go to the ICE raids this weekend, for instance, and at first they tried to make it out like literally millions of people were going to be arrested in the streets of America in one day. Now, just to think about what that would, and the media was like, had cameras everywhere to try to, you know, show that there was going to be this mass swarm. And instead, what did we see? Targeted raids in 10 cities. The goal was like an arrest of 2,000 people total. This is 10 major cities in the U.S. People who have already been received deportation orders from courts or did not show up in courts for their deportation hearing. That's it. Pretty limited category of illegal immigrants. People who have already been determined to not have a purpose to be here, to be here illegally by a court system. They've had their due process, or who have ignored that court process and did not show up for a deportation hearing. I mean, that's what the hearing was about, usually. So it was either final deportation or didn't show up for a deportation hearing. Now, the media tried to play it out like, oh my, there's going to be millions of people. You got to run to the churches. You got to run into, you know, close your windows and doors. I think, honestly, it made things worse. They increased the fear factor for immigrants in the United States and again, tried to scare these communities. When in fact it was such a limit, if you actually knew and reported the real news, it was a limited category of people that ICE was even looking for. I mean, they're a very limited category of people that out of those 10 cities, I mean, some of these were the most major Latino populations in the country. They were looking for a total of a couple thousand arrests. But at the same time, now the media is trying to say, see, it failed. Trump administration's plan failed. Their goal was like a couple thousand. We don't know the exact numbers yet. But ultimately, that was just for this weekend. They didn't say this is the only time we're going to enforce this. As President Trump said, this is the beginning of enforcing the laws that are already in place to deport those who have already received deportation notice. They've been fully adjudicated by the courts. Fully adjudicated. They've gotten all due process you can get. And when we come back, just look at the numbers. It was Obama who was the deporter in chief, not President Trump, who's trying to do things that will actually increase the humanitarian aspects at the border. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. Second half hour coming up. First half hour flew by. 1-800-684-3110. Remember the matching challenge, ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The new rule is intended to avoid abuse of the asylum system, which is overwhelming parts of the system, even while the border is overwhelmed, by instituting a requirement that people who come to our border must have and want to apply for asylum must have already applied and been denied at a country they passed through.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
And just to expand on that, from a good friend of ours, Ken Cuccinelli, former Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, is that if you had to have been able to make, you know, if you you had to be on a route that took you through a country where you could make the asylum claim legitimately, that means that you were no longer facing the fear of persecution or death because of the reasons out that we've outlined for you. Usually it's nationality, race, being targeted by a criminal element, targeted by the government because of your political beliefs. So again, there are reasons why those are kind of laid out. And then just to focus in on what you have to have a place where you could have made that claim. If you were being trafficked, the law exempts that. If you traveled through places and you were being chased down by MS-13 throughout Central America and Mexico, okay, the law exempts that. If you were being tortured in the process, this new rule exempts that. So it's got humanitarian and human rights safeguards within it. We'll take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. John on Facebook writes in, so what's to stop Mexico from simply denying asylum to everyone and just sending them on their way to America? Doing trade with the U.S., Wes. Well, let me bring in Wes Smith right away. Colonel Smith works on a lot of these issues with us, has written a lot about the immigration issue, trying to show how these rules are more compassionate, more humanitarian, so that less people get detained at facilities that are overwhelmed. But as John wrote it, Mexico has a skin in the game here because of their trade partnership with the U.S.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And President Trump, to his credit, has worked out an agreement that is used from time to time, the Migrant Protocol Protections, in which people claiming asylum are put back across the border in Mexico in holding areas, and they're kept there while the court docket eases up and they can come back for their hearing. But, you know, this is a multifaceted problem, Jordan. And so the fixes to this problem are also multifaceted. This rule is just one piece of trying to fix what is a genuine crisis on the border. And it's a crisis that Congress is unwilling to address. The House of Representatives, on their docket for things they're going to consider between now and their late summer vacation, there is not one thing on the docket addressing immigration reform or the crisis at the border. And meanwhile, they continue to be overwhelmed at the border. You know, people on the left decry the overcrowded conditions and all that's going on there, and they are overwhelmed and they are overcrowded, and yet they are doing absolutely nothing to fix it. Our immigration system is flawed. This rule is an attempt to just address one part of that, but it's a flawed system that's being exploited by transnational terrorist organizations, yep, criminal organizations, by drug cartels, by human traffickers. This is the issue of the day, and the Trump administration is trying to address just one part of it, as they should, because it seems that Congress is not going to address it at all in the near future.
When we come back, we'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. All this hoopla over these ICE raids over the weekend, yeah, which was a target of about 2,000 people. Now, that's not what you would have thought if you would have watched the news coverage of it. You would have thought that we were massively deporting 1 million-plus people in a day, which, again, to even have the numbers for. But let me just go through it for you. Under George W. Bush, approximately 2 million people were deported during his 8 years in office. Under the Obama administration, 2.5 million people deported. Under the Obama administration, ICE deportations were above 385,000 each year. From 2009 to 2011, actually hit a high of 410,000 one year. The Trump administration, ICE deportations have fallen to 220,000 in 2017, ticked up to 250,000. But I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of less deportations under the Trump administration. It was Obama who was called by the migrant rights groups the deporter in chief. But now, for political purposes, trying to demonize President Trump, who's actually trying to make things better for people who are already here, better for migrants, and better for those seeking real asylum. We come back, we take your calls, ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Facebook and Periscope audience, so if you want to see this later on, we've been playing for you some of the conference going on at the Department of Justice right now. There you see some of our radio friends. Than Bennett, our Director of Government Affairs, Harry Hutchinson from our legal policy team, Jeff Balaban, also who handles a lot of our Israel issues. So you see some of the ACLJ team members. There are more there as well. That is a conference they are at being held by the Department of Justice on boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement and combating anti-Semitism here in the United States and what the U.S. government can do as well. There's Mark Goldfeder from our team with Attorney General Barr. So again, it just shows you, for those watching, the ACLJ, I mean, we're dynamically involved in so many issues. So during like a matching challenge month when we are raising funds for the American Center for Law and Justice, to get all that team there, again, to be invited, have the expertise to be invited to participate at that level. And again, we were just showing the clips from the conference. I didn't know that they were going to show, you know, go right to our team being there and participating. But then, again, it takes resources. We know you care about defending the state of Israel, that you care about standing with Israel. This is a great time to support the work of the ACLJ. You donate online at aclj.org. Your donation is doubled. It's a matching challenge month in July. What does that mean? So if you make a $25 donation at aclj.org, that's all you're charged on your credit card. It's a tax-deductible donation to a 501c3. That's all you're charged. But we have donors ready to match that this month. So if you make the $25 donation, donors are ready to match that $25 donation. So effectively, your $25 has become $50 for the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org right now. It's why, I mean, I could go through a ton of issues, but why we have a team there at the Department of Justice, why we have the expertise to be invited there to participate is because of your support for the American Center for Law and Justice. That's aclj.org to take part in the matching challenge and make that a financial contribution today if you are able to, if you're in a position to do that. And again, I was looking through some of our statistics now. The average donation is somewhere between $35 to $45 this month. So again, don't think that you've got to be able to give $150 or $200 or $500 for you to have an impact here. All donations make a huge impact, especially during a matching challenge month when the impact is doubled. So it's aclj.org. Let's get right back to the phones because I feel like this is an issue. We may have to be defending in court as well. Pete has a question about that. Pete's calling in from Illinois online too. Pete, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thanks so much for taking my call. Yes, my question is, what would be the likelihood, for example, a liberal federal court would say that the ruling is unconstitutional right after it comes out.
Well, here's one of the problems. The law in place, drafted by Congress, the Immigration and Nationality Act, Wes, it gives the executive branch, I mean, I'm quoting the Immigration Nationality Act now, the ability to, quote, enhance the integrity of the asylum process by placing further restrictions or limitations on eligibility for aliens who seek asylum in the U.S. The Department of Justice and Homeland Security are looking at 8 CFR 2208-13C and 8 CFR 1208-13C to add a new bar to eligibility for asylum for an alien who enters or attempts to enter the U.S. across the southern border but did not apply for protection from persecution or torture where it was available in at least one country outside the alien's country of citizenship, nationality, or last lawful residence through which he or she transited en route to the U.S., with the exceptions for those being trafficked who wouldn't be able to make that claim, and those, again, also things like the Convention Against Torture. So I think that there will be legal challenges. It's not an executive order, though, because the Congress has already given the executive branch the power to have a decent amount of leeway in figuring out how to implement the asylum laws in our country.
Yeah, and the reason that the act was worded that way is because it's quite proper. It makes sense to delegate to the executive branch their ability to react to various crises and to events on the border and to take action in a timely way. If we depended on Congress to deal with all of these different exigencies, it would go on forever and ever. And so that's why the act was written that way. The way it is now, Jordan, and this is part of the reason the rule is coming out, the way it is now, people that make an asylum claim, if they're not held, the few that are held on the Mexico side with the migrant protocol protections, they are actually released into the country pending their court date, and most of them never come back. So far this year, this fiscal year, which started October the 1st, 58,000 people have been ordered to come back for their court date, and not one of those 58,000 has showed up. And so they're making asylum claims, and then they're disappearing into the country. And again, this whole system is flawed, is full of holes. Congress is not addressing it. Thankfully, the executive branch is trying to do something to control this, because right now it's out of control. And if we, this rule, another thing it will do, Jordan, for those who have legitimate asylum claims, it will help expedite some of those claims, because the immigration courts are overwhelmed as we speak.
If you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. There are two lines open right now, 1-800-684-3110. Right back to the phones we go. George in North Carolina. George, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the work that you guys do at the ALJ. I'm also a big Trump supporter.
Sure.
But I would say at this point that I'd like to say that years ago we were told by conservatives that this problem could be cut off at the source, meaning that if we implemented E-Verify and if we prosecuted the companies that are hiring these illegals, that would actually stem the problem and we'd have less of a problem at the border. And I would say at this point, 2.5 years in with Trump, I'm starting to think, and I love Trump, but I'm starting to think that this is all just more lip service.
I think what it is, George, and don't hang up, it's that this is the administration doing what it can by already delegated powers by Congress. To implement E-Verify federally, Congress would have to act. The president cannot do that alone. Congress would have to implement E-Verify at a federal level. Nancy Pelosi isn't going to be doing that. I mean, that's just the bottom line truth. So if you want that to be implemented, you're going to have major changes in Congress. The president cannot implement that on his own. Some states have done it. Some localities and cities have done it. But, George, that is the issue with E-Verify, is that Congress has got to pass that. I mean, so imagine right now Congress, they can't even figure out how to deal with the humanitarian crisis. Imagine them passing a E-Verify, which, again, punishes both the employer and identifies those who are here illegally, who may have faulty information that the U.S. didn't know about, people that the U.S. didn't already know about. So that is the issue, is that this administration takes every action it can. Look at the travel ban. They win at the Supreme Court. Hard fought all the way up. Look at the Title X funding, like a Planned Parenthood. On this issue, they are taking the actions that they can take within the bounds of executive power and what has been delegated to them by Congress. I mean, that's the key here, Wes, is that President Trump, the DOJ and Department of Homeland Security aren't just coming up with new law. They are using existing law, modifying it where they are where they have been given the power to do so by Congress already. And then if Congress doesn't like the way that they're modifying it, Congress can always take action, and there's a check there. But what they will do is try to have a court be their check instead. Mm-hmm. And they have had limited success in challenging the Trump administration. Ultimately, when these reach, if these do reach the Supreme Court, they lose because the courts don't like stepping in and figuring things out that could have been handled politically through elected officials.
Yeah, it's a poor way to run the immigration system. It really is. There is hope, you know, for the actions of the administration like this. For example, the migrant protocol protections, which allows us to keep people on the Mexico side pending, you know, their asylum hearing. That was also challenged in court, and yet the judge is still going to be heard in court, but he allowed that to stay in place pending the actual court date, and hopefully that would happen in this case as well. But it is a broken system, and the administration is trying, believe it or not, this is a compassionate response to this horrible situation that's on the border. They're accused of not having compassion. I tell you what is a lack of compassion. And that is people on the left in Congress refusing to go down and fix the immigration laws to give relief at the border so that this does not happen. The administration is doing all they can. ICE is doing all they can. CBP is doing all they can to care for people who are amassed by the thousands at our southern border because Congress is not doing anything.
There is a 900,000-plus case backlog. 900,000. That means there are 900,000 people right there, most who have been let out, who are not detained at all. 900,000 people's cases, and that doesn't include how many family members that might include in that 900,000, of people who are just waiting for their asylum case to be taken up by the immigration courts. That is a legal crisis in our system. That is a system breakdown as well, and you've got to do everything possible to fix that problem. And one of the fixes is ensuring that a rule like this, which is followed by most of the world, is supported by human rights organizations and places like the United Nations and other countries, is that the rule of you first step foot and are safe, that is where you make your claim of asylum. If you don't get asylum there, you can move along. And it's an international rule. It should not be controversial. But of course, Trump administration does it. It must be somehow illegal or unconstitutional. We'll take your phone calls when we come back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
back to Jay Sekulow Live in the final segment where you're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Just saw, if you watch on Facebook and Periscope, I know I've been saying this a lot today, and most of our audience is on terrestrial radio or satellite radio. But for those of you watching on Facebook and Periscope, and for those of you who aren't right now, always know that you can go to our official Facebook pages and see that. So you can always go back and you can, once the show is posted, you can kind of zoom through. So if you listen to the whole show today or most of the show today and you want to see what we're doing during the breaks, sometimes we're keep the discussion going and taking comments. Other times we've got special video. We just kind of premiered a more extended preview of the documentary we did about fighting the IRS for Tea Party, conservative, and pro-life organizations and the victory there. And it really, what it does is it's a lot of our clients. You'll see some well-known members of Congress like Jim Jordan, but really it's about the clients who some did a lot of interviews on TV and testified before Congress, others did not. But what it meant to them as well to fight back against the IRS and what the victory against the IRS after a 5-year-long battle ultimately meant to them. And I think Tom Z from Ohio, who I worked with again on this case, he said it well in the piece when he said, because of what the IRS had to finally admit to in court, that in the next time this happens to another group because of their viewpoint, it won't take them 5 years in court. It'll take them 5 minutes because of what happened through our actions. So again, another great reason to support the work of the ACLJ, go to ACLJ.org. We have a matching challenge right now. Whatever you can donate is double. So doesn't mean your charge doubled. You make the same donation you make. It's tax deductible, but then we have donors ready to match that. So if you've ever thought about donating to the ACLJ or you're a regular donor, either way, this is a great time to donate because you're doubling the impact of your financial contribution at ACLJ.org. Back to the phones we go. People have been holding on. Let me go to Jerry in Rhode Island on line 3. Jerry, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hello. Good showcase from the LLM study on various aspects to it. And to the caller who says lip service for Trump, he doesn't understand the limitations of executive action versus requiring Congress. And Colonel West did a good expose on that. How are we going to vet previous countries? I think you said because Mexico has some financial skin, there's a little bit of oversight there. What about the other countries on the other side?
So most other countries do. I mean, most countries in the world where you could make a legitimate asylum claim, which is what this law is about. So we're not talking about like if you pass through a failed state, you had to make your asylum claim there, or a country that doesn't even have, you know, a system in place where you could legitimately do it. But if you do pass through one where you're no longer, life is no longer at risk, you're not facing threat of your life or persecution, that you make the, at least make a claim there. And if your claim is denied there, you can move along to the U.S. And you just need to show that to the U.S., I tried, but they either denied my claim, the system didn't work, I was deported, some kind of documentation there. And I think that it will be fairly implemented in the sense of that if you did not pass through countries where that's even legitimate, that you can't make that claim, of course, you know, you couldn't make the claim. But I think what it does is it puts a bar on a lot of people who will show up. And it will say, well, did you make this claim in Mexico? Is there a reason why you can't make your first asylum claim there? And that doesn't guarantee that Mexico will allow them through or that their system will even grant asylum. But it does say, did you first try here? And why not? You know, unless you're being trafficked, unless someone is chasing you down, unless you're being hunted through Mexico, if you were like being persecuted by your government somewhere in Central America and you got to Mexico and that was no longer a threat, did you make a claim? Well, now you need to. Or did you, if you got out of one Central American country into another, which is very different, did you make the claim there? If you didn't, well, you needed to go and do that first. That's what this law is about. Now, is the law uniform across the world? Absolutely not. Asylum laws are different in every single country. Some countries are much more welcoming of asylum seekers than others. And that's why ours says if you don't get through, you can come to the U.S. and still make that claim. So I think it still gives that... shows that we're a country that wants to accept those who are facing real threats of persecution, whose lives are in danger. But it's just saying that, listen, there are other places you can do this. Do it there. At least try. Because if you're really facing a life threat like that, being in the U.S. for economic purposes is not your number one purpose for fleeing. It's getting out of the place you're fleeing and being in a safe place, a safe country where you can expect to no longer face that specific threat.
Yeah, the United States is on record historically as being a safe haven for people who fear for their lives because of political or religious persecution. And we continue to accept people like that. What is happening on the southern border is that people who have legitimate fears for their life and their safety are being held back because the system is overwhelmed with people who do not have a legitimate claim of asylum. One of the things that Lindsey Graham also pointed out, which I think was really shocking, is that about 30% of the people coming across the border as families, they are fake families, and they're using the same children over and over again to escort them across the border to make false asylum claims so they can be released into the interior of the country. This is a real, real problem. It's a problem for the people coming to the border. It's a problem for the people of the United States. And again, this rule is just one fix of a very multifaceted problem that the administration is trying to address.
Let's go to Phil in California on line one. Phil, welcome to JSecio Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is, why cannot the United Nations get involved? Let me explain. I work with refugees that are coming from the Middle East. What happens there, they go to a refugee camp that's administered by the United Nations. The United Nations talks to each person and says, okay, you and your family will go to Germany. You and your family will go to Australia. You and your family will go to America. When they're assigned, then the American embassy gets involved and takes over from there.
Yeah, so that you're talking about processes where there is a conflict, and so the UN's refugee agency actually sets up what are supposed to be temporary but oftentimes are very long-term refugee camps where basically everyone is fleeing with a actionable claim because of war, like Syrian refugees. And then they still need to be vetted to make sure that you don't have like ISIS fighters in there and bad actors in there, criminals in there. And then they go through a what is not a perfect process either by the UN. Look at some of those camps. It's like, and what people go through. And I think that's why you haven't seen the UN condemning, by the way, a lot of these actions, because they've got their own refugee crises and issues. But usually, Wes, those are set up when you've got like a war that's broken out, or a genocide that's begun. And so basically everyone, almost 90% of the people can make a legitimate asylum claim. They have no place to return to anymore. Their towns are destroyed. Their communities were wiped out. So it's not just an economic issue. It is they have no other place to go.
Yeah.
So that is why I think you have not seen the UN here, because these are, though the scale is massive, a lot of this is fraudulent.
It is. And people from other countries where we're separated by oceans, you can't just walk up to the border like they're doing now. And yet the United States is trying to be compassionate. They're trying to address the legitimate asylum claims and yet still deal with being overwhelmed at the border.
I applaud this move by the Trump administration. It's adopting a policy and rule which is applied by most countries in the world, most Western countries in the world, most pro-human rights countries like our country in the world, good democracies, democratic republics like ours. And now this is finally being adopted into rules. I think it's a very good thing for our country. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. If you want to support the work of the ACLJ, go to aclj.org. We'll talk to you next time.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at